So we've just finished a series, haven't we? On who remembers what the series was that we did? Heaven, hell, and judgment. And to me, those are like big things, aren't they? Those are like war type things. Those are things where big things have come through. Have you ever thought how hard it is to consider what to preach after that? You know, now you've been given heaven, hell, and judgment. What on earth do you come and preach after this? I don't know if a lot of you know that in the Second World War, there was a lady known as Vera Lynn. You guys in the UK might know her quite well. She was the Forces' sweetheart, and she sang a lot of the songs. And of course, Jeanette knows I love Vera Lynn. I love all her songs, and I've got all her songs, I think. Even though she was a little bit before my time, she's probably more in Russ's time than my time. But do you know that during the Second World War, they actually asked her? They actually stopped her songs going out for a period into to where the men were fighting, because her songs are all nostalgic. They're all longing for home and for when the war's over and all of this. And they didn't think that these would be the sort of songs people should hear when they're at the front fighting. You know, you want people when they at the front fighting, you want them to have songs that are going to be, you know, we can go out there and we can win. We can have the victory. So I was actually looking at it saying that basically we were told that we're in a war, and I've got to now try give a. I wanted to give a preach, and my preach was going to be like a Vera Lynn song. I don't want it to be like a Vera Lynn song where we all nostalgically go, "Oh, okay," and we can all sit back and relax. It's actually something that's to inspire us to go on, to realize what we actually have. So hopefully, to put steel in us, as opposed to, even though it's talking about something soft, something to put steel in us, something to put us as we go forward. I've entitled this "Work Hard to Be at Rest." Work hard to be at rest. Bit of an oxymoron, you know, it's a contradiction, but hopefully I'll cover a little bit of that. So if you want to turn, Jeanette and I, in our prayer time, in our devotions in the morning, we're going through the book of Hebrews. I know we've already done the book of Hebrews, but you're going through it again. It's always a good thing to have things repeated, I find. So Hebrews chapter 4, and I'm going to read from verse 4 to verse 13. And Hebrews chapter 4 from verse 4. "For he has spoken somewhere of the seventh day in this way, and God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And again in this passage he said, 'They shall not enter my rest,' since therefore it remains for some to enter it, and those who formerly received the good news failed to enter because of disobedience. Again he appoints a certain day, today, saying through David so long afterwards in the words already quoted, 'Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts.' For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken of another day later on. So then, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has rested from his works, as God did from his." Key verse being verse 11. "Let us therefore strive to enter that rest, so that no one may fall by the same sort of disobedience. For the word of God is living and active, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing to the division of soul and spirit, of joints and of marrow, and discerning of the thoughts and intentions of the heart. And no creature is hidden from his sight, but all are naked and exposed to the eyes of him to whom we must give account." And if you notice in verse 11 there, he says we must strive to enter that rest. That means we've got to work very hard to enter God's rest. And And of course, why do we have to work hard? And I don't know if you realize, but you know that when we picture rest, we often picture laziness. You know, they almost go together. Years ago, and I'm sure the cartoon came from the UK, but in Zimbabwe, in our newspaper, every day there would be a little cartoon called Andy Cap. We all know Andy Cap. Good. Rather busy guy, wasn't he? You know. Always with a hat on, a drink in his hand maybe, and maybe laying on a chair. You know, as a matter of fact, I think his wife's name was Flo or something, if I remember rightly. And she used to run around and do everything. And Andy Cap used to sit and relax. And some of us picture rest a bit like that. You know, we're a bit like the lazy Andy Cap who's doing nothing, whereas, you know, the people doing the work. So we get rather het up with stories like Mary and Martha, you know, because Martha's the one actually working, and yet Mary's getting all the praise. But that's not the rest it's talking about. As a matter of fact, if you go look at the Ten Commandments, The command on rest was actually quite a novel command for the people in those days. You know, normally if you put laws out, you're telling people that they've got to go work. And yet God put out a law telling people that they had to, at the risk of even losing finances, take a day off, take a day of rest. And so they had to work to do it. Let me tell you, if you read through the whole Bible, you'll find that the Sabbath was one of the issues they had to fight to try and keep. And even today, it's one of the things that's there. Now, it's interesting. I actually put down here a couple of examples of how we know the Jews keep the Sabbath, and they're known for keeping the Sabbath. But you want to know that the rest of the world, because they know the Jews keep the Sabbath, you can see the devious minds thinking, they don't do anything on the Sabbath. We can do something about this. And if you go back in time, and I wrote this down, by the way, before all that's happened this weekend. So you'll see how it fits in. So if you go back in time, in between the periods of the Old Testament and the New Testament, the Jews did a rebellion, the Maccabean revolt, that where they rebelled. It was a whole family of Jews, Simeon, Judas, and others. They led a revolt with the Jews because the temple had been desecrated. There was a whole lot of things. The Greeks had come in. I think it was the Seleucids had come in and actually sort of they desecrated a lot of where the Jews were. So the Jews revolted, and they started a war now between the Jews and this Greek army. And there was a king or a general there, General Nicanor, who was looking at some way to now attack the Jews. And if you read in one of the books that it's not part of the our Bible, but it's in the 2 Maccabees chapter 15, it talks there about how this general looked at the Jews and thought, do you know, they rest on the Sabbath. So what's a good day for us to fight them? I know, let's go hit them on the Sabbath. And so he did. He actually went and he targeted his attack on the Sabbath. If you read the rest of the story, by the way, it was a bit of a disaster. And the victory actually ended up being with the Maccabees as opposed to with him. Go 2,000 years later, Israel's now in the land. And this is now what Russ has actually even spoken about today. And on the 6th of October, 1973, the Egyptian and Syrian forces had combined, and they decided they were going to attack Israel. But they decided, do you know, the Jews not only rest on the Sabbath, but they rest on their annual Sabbaths. And of course, they've got the Yom Kippur coming, and of course, they know that that's a day when they fast and rest. So that would be a good day to attack them. And so began the Yom Kippur War. And it's interesting that that was the 6th of October, 73. Now you go 50 years forward to this week, and what happened? Again, and it's interesting, they targeted, it seems, at the beginning of the Sabbath. So it's almost like you could see the way Satan's strategy doesn't change. You know, he's sort of where he thinks it'll be a weak point. And our finding rest with God is something that Satan is always going to attack. And we need to make sure that we have this rest. So I don't really want to focus on the Sabbath part of it, because we covered that a lot in the Ten Commandments we did and in the preach that was done on Hebrews. But let's just have a look at this word rest and how we can actually find rest. So the Greek word is katapausis. Paul could correct that totally afterwards, as I probably wrecked that. But anyway, I love the fact that there's the word pause in the middle of it, which has probably got nothing to do with anything in there, but it's like rest as you're going to take a pause. But it's talking about a place of rest, a place of quietness, a place of still. We know that Bible that they were reading at that time that had been translated into Greek, that those Greek, the Hebrew words had been translated into Greek, and he's there quoting from Psalm 95. Now, if we go look at the word rest used in the Hebrew Bible, it's not the word, like, we know that the word Sabbath actually means rest, the Shabbat, you know, that's peace and rest, that's where that word comes in. But that's not the word they used in Psalm 95. In Psalm 95, they actually use the word, I've got to see where I've written it down here. Hold on. They use the word, and I would have it, but I've just lost it temporarily. Sorry. There we go. Okay. I'll find it on my other notes. So it's the word menacha. How do you say it? Menacha. Menachah, okay, which is the word rest. But it's also talking there about a place of rest, more than it's talking just about rest. It's indicating a place of rest and that you know you can go into, which is why it was linked to the rest when Joshua was taking them into the promised land. That was going to be the place where they would find their rest, where they could actually relax and be at home. And so this place of rest, of course, that they go into, it's used in a number of places in the Old Testament, which I'll come back to. But before I do that, they were using it to go into this place of rest, but the guys had to be ready at any time to know that they're going to be attacked because of it. So this is a belief they've brought in where they know that the world is going to go against them. And this got me thinking. You know, in Zimbabwe was a wonderful place. We've got a couple of people of us now from Zimbabwe, but it's gone through some very stressful periods. And it was back in the 90s, we had this, it was almost like a false sense of blessing, that it was like you went through this period where we were able to suddenly buy a house, and it was like things were starting to go well. And then, of course, when we hit the beginning of this century, but anyway, when we got into the 2000, it's like all the wheels fell off in Zimbabwe. And they started doing, a lot of the people started wanting land, and they started invading a lot of the farms and taking over the farms and that. And it became quite a tense time. So we knew a lot of farmers involved in our church. And what these farmers did, they knew that these people were coming. They knew that the war vets were about to invade their land, and at any time they could be thrown off. And so because of this, they used to have to get a go bag going so that they could actually be ready. So even though they had to stay at peace, where they were, they had to carry on as normal, they kept this bag with them so that if anything happened, they'd be able to leave straight away. And I thought I'd just ask Jeanette to share, because I shared with this already at the home group, but I thought I'd just get Jeanette to share her experience of doing this when in Zimbabwe.
So in a country where there's political instability and when one group is against another group, it causes a lot of turmoil, it causes fear, and it doesn't matter what, I'm not taking sides as to which group was against which group, but there was a lot of fear. And when there's fear and turmoil in a country and you're not getting the stability from the government, there's a lot of rumors that go around cities, especially cities, there's lots of stories of what's happening. A lot of it wasn't true, but fear starts to set in. And within particularly the white community, we suddenly were fearful. Does this mean that we're going to lose our homes here in the city? Does that mean that when the soldiers are out singing on the streets, are they going to come into our homes and take over our houses? Now, for a lot of you, you'll think that could never happen. But for us, it was a very real thought process. And as we were watching some of the farmers coming in off their lands, coming into the cities, some still had properties that they could live in within the towns, but some didn't. Some of them literally left with just the clothes that they were able to quickly get in their go bag and whatever they could quickly put into a car or a van and leave. And I suddenly thought, I was looking around my house, and we had a nice house. It was a big house. It was roomy. And I was suddenly looking at this and thinking, what would I take? What would I take? What is important to me? And I remember I was crying. I was looking at my home, because people who know me know that everything that I have in my home has a memory attached to it. Every picture, every piece of furniture, every pot, it symbolizes a person, a place, a time. And I looked at it and I wandered around. And I stood in our hallway, and we had a whole lot of albums. I'm like the archivist of the family. I've got pictures of both sides of the family going back to the 1920s. And I thought, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What was important to us was our passports and being registered in the embassy, the British Embassy. and that my family was safe. That was it. That was important. And when I spoke to the farmers, for them, a lot of them, there was a lot of hurt and a lot of trauma. But for them, getting out safely with their family was what counts. And I remember standing there and saying, God, you've given me this. You can do this again. And it was a point in time where I thought, I can walk away. I can actually walk away. Now, that was a moment in time. And then it's amazing how things change. And then when we go to willingly leave Zimbabwe, I was clambering to keep all the stuff that I had 10 years ago said, I don't need it. So your vision changes and your focus changes. And it's more for me just to say, to remind you that all this stuff, it's stuff. We can't take it with us at the end of the day. We just need to keep our focus on Christ, and we have to work at that, to keep it, to maintain it. Because in good times, we forget. And then we're drawn back to difficult times, and we remember.
Very good. Amen. Amen. So have your go bag. You know, so to me, striving to enter that rest, we need to know what is important. It means getting your priorities right. It means knowing what you need to take with you. And you want to know what you actually need to take with you? Is nothing. What you need to take with you are people and your relationship with Christ. there's a verse that they use in the Bible. It says that we need to have our loins girded. Now, I don't know if you know what loins girded means. I mean, it's ladies probably know better. Now, years ago, when I was little, we had a sports day at the school. And in those days, of course, and even when we were there, it was they still have it, they'd have a mothers and fathers race. I don't know if they do that anymore. Do they still do mothers and fathers races? So, okay, but now back when I was a kid, of course, all the moms wore dresses or long skirts. That was the end thing. And all I can remember as a kid, we'd all be sitting there and they'd have the mothers race coming up. And the mothers would all come out, and what they'd be doing, you'd see them hitching up their skirts and I assume they're tucking them into something, I don't know. But you know, they'd be hitching up their skirts to get it away from their legs so that they could run. So you see all the ladies all standing there, all getting their skirts all hitched, ready to run. You know, that's what girding up your loins actually means. It's get ready to run. It's because now in those days, back in the Bible days, the guys, the people wearing dresses were actually the guys. So it's not a new thing. But of course, they wore robes, and they had a belt around the robe. And what they would do, if they had a run, they would actually tuck a lot of the belt that hung down in the belt, so it wouldn't flap around and get in the way when you're running. So in other words, you just had to prepare yourself to run. Get ready to run. You know that get set, on your marks, get set, go. You had to prepare yourself to run. And that's what I believe, when you have to struggle to rest, we need to be prepared for it to be a battle. Prepared for it to be a battle. What God did, he actually set us the Sabbath aside with Israel so that they could actually find that time. Because he actually says, if you go through the scriptures, he tells them they mustn't work and harvest. You know, even at the time when it was their year end and everything, they were to rest. So they had to rest. But I'll talk about the other aspect just now. But in the New Testament, we know that the emphasis of that law has been sort of changed. And we now have the Lord's Day, where we actually come together and actually have a time when we can focus on each other. And you know that this is a time, hopefully, where we can actually separate from the world and come together to rest. And it's a time where we can strengthen each other and encourage each other to go forward. But let me tell you, keep your loins girded, because Satan will do everything he can to stop you going to church. Satan will do everything he can to stop you setting aside times for rest. I think this time of rest, by the way, that's why I said I wanted to move away from the Sabbath, because I don't want to get focused on a day. But in actual fact, you know that I believe we should be setting aside a time every day where we can actually just take a breather, step back, and allow God to speak to us. Now, there are circumstances in people's lives, by the way. If you're a mother with a baby, setting aside an hour slot to be alone with God doesn't happen. But you need to be ready at the times when you can, like when the baby's been put to sleep or when there's a moment's rest. Have a time when you can actually step back and relax. Or even if you have, like we were able to do once or twice, we dropped the kids off with the mom and we would go have a sort of a time just for ourselves with granny. Yeah, and so, you know, we need to, but you'll need to fight for that time. You'll need to fight for that time because it's interesting. God put it in there, but it's something that doesn't come easily. Now, in the New Testament, it doesn't talk about your loins being girded so much as Christ actually says, stay awake, be alert, be watchful. And he uses more the picture of the watchman at night. And it's interesting that when he says, stay awake and, you know, and watch, I always then get a picture of Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane. I mean, here they are. They've had this hectic week. You know, it's been quite a long week for them, going backwards and forwards from Bethany to Jerusalem. He's cast people out of the temple. There's been, you know, he then got them to organize the Passover service on a spur of the moment type thing where he had set things in place for, but they actually went and had it set it up. They had a special Passover, which got very emotional because of what Christ was sort of giving them. And now, of course, it's late on the Thursday evening, and they're in the Garden of Gethsemane. And so Jesus takes takes Peter, Paul, and John and says, just pray with me for an hour. You know, only an hour. And they fall asleep because they're just wrecked. I mean, I know that feeling. I know it's, you know, when you've got a preacher, sometimes maybe some of you are doing this to me right now. It's when you've got a preacher who's just going on and on and on. And you know that he's only talking for like 20 minutes so you can stay awake. It's just, you know. So I can imagine what they were going through at that time, how they were struggling. But they fell asleep. And he says, you couldn't watch with me even for 1 hour. And I think that of course, if they'd only known, that was about to enter probably the darkest time in world universe history, the time when God would be killed, when God would be put on the cross, when Jesus would actually die. You know, it's actually, if you think of it in terms of, now we know God can't be killed because he's Almighty God. So that's, but it's a time when man would actually, if you want, reject God. And probably the darkest time. Now, we're about to head, I think, into a dark time in history again. And I think that one of the things that's calling on us is to stay awake. Not to white-knuckle it, but to have our loins girded, you know, ready to run, ready to go forward. Now, there's a picture that this word peace is used in another place in the Old Testament. It's used in quite a few places, by the way. I've only taken a couple. But it's used in one of the Psalms that I thought I would just sort of end off with. And if you go to Psalm 23, and of course it's a well-known Psalm, but a beautiful Psalm. But if you just, I'm just going to read through it now and then just get some points from it. Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. The word peace in there, by the way, is actually in verse 2, where it says, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters, peaceful waters. And if you have a look at this, here's picturing God as our shepherd. He's the one looking after the sheep. And the sheep then have this lovely field where they've got nice still waters to drink. They've got food to eat. But then he throws in another picture in the middle of it, doesn't he? It's suddenly a picture almost of a battle. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. So suddenly it's no longer this peaceful valley, but they're now in a valley where there's death all around them. That always reminds me of the Charge of the Light Brigade, I think it was, isn't it? Or the one that goes, you know, into the valley of death, rode the, how many is it? 600. You know, cannon to right of them, cannon to left of them, volleyed and thundered. You know, so I always think of that as they're riding into this, you know, going through the valley of the shadow of death. But it says that even here, you don't fear evil. And there's an enemy. So obviously it's a war situation now. There's an enemy facing you. And whilst the enemy's facing you, God's prepared you a table. And at that point, that's when God's anointing you with oil. And it's not at the time when you're at the top of the mountain. It's actually at the time when you're in the valley. It's at the time when you're at the lowest that God prepares a table for you. Now, we had the pastor that actually planted the church that we had that we were leading in Harare. Him and his wife, they used to have a saying. They would say, "We are paid like paupers, but we live like kings." And you want to know, I find that is often very true. Often what actually happens, this world will try and ensure the fact that you're at a point of need. You're at a point of where you're not coming out as you should. There are areas of issues that you have to deal with. But there will always be places where God will give you blessings. And we saw that often, where we were able to go on holidays, which, I mean, the fact that when we went to America, when we first went on to the NCMI team, we went across to America. At that point, we had zero in the bank, I think. I mean, we'd agreed to do all of this, and we were suddenly thinking, well, how are we going to do this? You know, no money in the bank, and yet we've got to then not only have money to go across there, but we'd have to have money to live on whilst we're there. You know, and of course, our church wasn't rich, so it wasn't like we could go up to someone wealthy in our church and go, by the way, you know, we want to go across there. So, but let me tell you, God made a way. God made a way. And it's God can actually provide those sort of things as you go through. And he did this, and I thought as a final thing, I would actually just show you an example of where this happened with Israel, with all they were going through. If you want to turn to Exodus 15, verse 27, the final verse. And to just give you the scenario of what this verse is beforehand. So Israel, as you know, they were actually in bondage in Egypt. They were being treated as slaves. Talk about the Sabbath rest. You know that they were given a Sabbath rest. They actually came from Egypt, where they didn't have a single day rest. As a matter of fact, actually something I didn't talk about here was one of the things that I think is important for us is one of the reasons we're given the Sabbath isn't for ourselves, it's for others. Do you know that when they were told that they had to keep the Sabbath, one of the things was they had to make sure that they didn't make anyone else work on the Sabbath. So it wasn't just for me. It's actually for me to show love to someone else. And it was given to them. They said because they were slaves in Egypt where they had nothing, now they were given a day of rest, and they were to ensure that that day of rest was shared by others. But anyway, they were in Egypt. They had 10 plagues came in. So they were a horrific time whilst they did this. And of course, whilst the plagues were going on, things were just getting worse and worse for them. Pharaoh was just treating them worse and worse and worse. And so it wasn't looking good. And then eventually they were let go in what looked like a victory. But seconds later, Pharaoh is now chasing them with chariots and all of this. And they end up having to race through the darkness and then they find themselves cornered by the Red Sea, Pharaoh behind them, and they're stuck. And so what do they do now? And of course, through a miracle, God parts the Red Sea, they cross, and they arrive on the other side. They're now in the wilderness. They think they've now reached rescue. They travel along, they get to a place to get some water, and the water's bad. The guys are actually, they cannot drink. The water's not there, and eventually the water has to be healed for them. So just one thing after another like this keeps happening. And so it's been like a period of about a month where everything has gone wrong. And they now arrive, and in verse 27 it says, "Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the water." And it's interesting, it's just put there as a verse, and if you go to Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy talks about all their traveling they did, this place is mentioned again. And I actually think, because they don't even stay there long, by the way. They're there for a brief while before they go to Mount Sinai and actually then get the Ten Commandments. But God actually gave them, during this turmoil, God gave them a place of rest. He gave them this Elim, this little place where they had water, palm trees, a place where they could relax and just rest, a breather. And I want to tell you that I don't know what sort of trials you're going through, whatever it is, know that God, in those trials, God will give you little Elims. And we've got to keep an eye open for those, because they're not things we can often miss them, but rest that God can give us whilst we're going through these trials, a place where we can just sit back and relax. But let me tell you, you sometimes have to fight for those places of rest. Another thing we did at the home group, we were looking at, because we'd just done judgment, we were going through Matthew 25 and some of the things on Matthew 25. And of course, you've got the final place where he separates the sheep from the goats. And if you remember what he does to them, he says to them, he judges them based on, you know, he says, "Where, you know, you can come in because you visited me when I was naked, when I was in prison, when I was," and they said, "Well, when did we do this?" And he says, "No, you did this when you did it to the least of my brothers. And the others who were cast out, he says, you can't come in because you didn't visit me and clothe me in that. And he says, when you didn't do this to others. And one of the things I noticed there is two points that I actually got from that judgment is that in the judgment, we're judged by what we did with Jesus. Jesus was saying, what you did to me, but Jesus judges what we do to him by how we treat others. Now, that's quite heavy. I don't know if you actually thought about that. How do you treat other people? But I want you to think, it's not about how you treat my wife, because I love her, or how I treat my kids, because I love them. It's how you treat the least. Now, the least, who are the least? I want you to think of the person that you get on with the least. And that might be the Satanists down the road. That might be the Muslim living across the street. It might be the couple next door that are actually horrendous. And it doesn't mean you have to always agree with them, because that's obviously not the point at all. But are you there to show them love? Are you able to treat them like you would have treated Jesus? Quite interesting. So, but in this, the reason I mentioned this, by the way, with this, is that this peace that we're actually looking for, some of us are going through good times right now, and that's great. We can enjoy that. But at the same time as we're doing that, there are others of us that are not going through good times. Sometimes those of us going through good times can help those to find their peace. We can actually be there, and because it's not all about us. God isn't blessing you just so that you can be blessed. God's blessing you to be a blessing. So sometimes we need to maybe just look how we can actually help someone else be at peace. Someone else have that little Elim, that little place where they can be still and that. So anyway, I just thought I would share that today as you're going through this time of battle. And it's interesting that it happened, I'm sharing it at the same time as Israel's just going into this war zone there. But to know that whatever you're going through, whether you're going through victories at the moment or whether you're actually in a dark place at the moment, know that God can still give you rest, even in those places. But you might have to fight for those places. But not to give up. Because the one thing that you find, if you go through Hebrews, he says, encourage each other with this. He says, he always says, encourage each other with these words. And we need to encourage and strengthen each other not to give up. Because the only time that you lose is if you give up. And of course, God can give you the strength to keep going. God can give you the strength to not give up. Because it ends, that chapter ended with the fact that Jesus is our high priest. We don't have a high priest that can actually be like anyone else. Jesus is actually the word that actually can cut to bone and marrow and everything that. He is the word that can actually bring that to us. He is the one that can make a difference, because those things are often things that can't be divided, like it talks about soul and spirit. Do you know that there's no way a human being could ever divide soul and spirit? It's that we are one being, and it's made up of the two. But Jesus has a way of dividing what can't be divided. He can actually separate. So you've got a situation where you think, there's no way this can be solved. Jesus can actually bring a resolution to that. But we have to hold on to him. We have to be faithful with him and not give up. So for those of us in a spacious place right now, let's look at how we can help others and their journey and maybe allow God to use us to be a source for them. But let's, in all of this, let's encourage each other with these words and not give up. Very good, amen.